get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have the legend Charles Float. Now, you're going to love this episode because we cover a lot of things to do with this case study, but we also cover a lot of link building tactics, both with backlinks, and with internal linking. So first we cover his background, some of the things he's done in the past with his SEO agencies. We jump straight into one of his new case studies in cryptocurrency. So he has a new crypto site. We discuss some of the tactics around there. We go into the common mistakes that he sees through his SEO audit service. So he audits a lot of affiliate sites and does video reviews there. And some of the common mistakes that he sees through those sites, and often it comes down to internal linking, which we also cover a lot during the podcast, but also in terms of backlinks. And we cover a lot of backlinking strategy with this, where to send your links, tiered link building. We even cover the importance of nofollow links. So obviously nofollow links don't pass juice, but Charles talks about how we can activate these nofollow links to pass more authority and trust. We also cover things about relevancy and power with links, and one of Ahrefs' more recent case studies around sites having more links that are able to rank higher, whether this is a chicken and egg thing or basically Charles' opinion on this. We also cover a slightly black hat topic, and we look at parasite SEO. And we also look at online reputation management. So parasite SEO, essentially using other people's websites to rank whatever it is we're trying to rank. And then online reputation management, where we're trying to, where people are essentially trying to bury any kind of bad news or bad press about them. And then we finish off with what Charles's opinion is on the future of Google search. Obviously now, as niche website builders, we see when we're searching keywords, maybe we see Google Shopping on there, we see more YouTube widgets, we see people also asked and all sorts of things covering the page. So what he sees as the future going forward within Google. So enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
All right, welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have the legendary Charles Float. Thanks for joining us, Charles.
Thank you for having me, James.
No problem. All right, so first, just for people who might not be aware of you, just give us a brief background, maybe yourself, and maybe some of the things you've done previously in your agencies.
Yeah, so I have been an SEO for, I want to say, like 13 years now, nearly 14 years or something, which is feels like a lot longer than that, to be honest. Like it's weird because it's basically half my life that I've been doing SEO for, and it feels like my entire life I've been doing SEO for. So I've kind of had a benefit of basically being able to go straight into SEO as my career, because I started so young. My first job when I was 16, I lied and said I was 18, was a junior SEO position at an agency in Birmingham, which is where I'm from in the UK. And I started working for them, and then about 6 months in, they wanted to do my tax returns with me, and I didn't have a tax ID. So I just made one up and gave it to them. And they were like, this isn't valid. And I was like, yeah, I'm only 16.
Early days of tax fraud. Like,
yeah, exactly. So I was like, yeah, I'm actually only 16. And the guy was like, what? He was like, oh, I wanted to like make you the SEO manager, but now like I've kind of got to fire you. So he, so, yeah. So that happened, but luckily at the same time, I'd just gone for a meeting with another local SEO called Matthew Barbie, who is now the like VP of marketing for HubSpot, I believe, or something like that. Mm. He's quite big with over there in HubSpot. So I met with him, and he was the manager for another SEO agency at the time. And I basically said, hey, look, I'm probably going to be leaving this agency soon. Like I told him the full story. I was just about to turn 17. So it was, I was legally able to work anyway. You're legally able to work at 16, but they pay you a lot less in the UK. So I didn't want to get paid a lot less. I wanted that 18 salary, right? So luckily I went over to this agency that Matthew Barber's worked in at, and they actually offered me more money. So they just doubled my salary from what I was on the other place anyway. So I was really happy with that. But then 3 months into there, I just realized, like, I don't think I can work for people. I have an authority complex. Like, I really just dislike working for other people and working in agencies and working on client stuff even. So I set up my own business, started blogging and SEO, set up an agency, set up an affiliate site, kind of just threw my hat into every kind of SEO business you can do. Some of them didn't work out. Some of them did. Some of them I've sold. I've sold two agencies now for six figures. And I've slowly transitioned away from client work more towards my mainly my affiliate portfolio, and then consultancy and training in SEO, as well as like I'm part owner in my own family business, which we now have like 300 employees in the UK or something. So it's mental how big that's grown. So we've just slowly been building everything up, and I've slowly been realizing what I actually like to focus on, right? Because I've tried so many different things in SEO, you know, affiliate sites, link building services, agency, freelance, consulting, everything, right? CPA, ads, the whole lot. I've tried it all. And I felt I kind of, because I've tried that, it kind of positioned me in a way that I understand what I really enjoy, what I like, and it's allowed me to do what I enjoy every day rather than just kind of slaving away at projects and sites and stuff that I don't enjoy and I don't want to do. Because I have a problem with, and you're probably, a lot of people in your audience will understand this, especially in niche website building community. I build a site, I build out the project, I'll put 6 months into it, I rank it, and then like the drive will just go because there's no competition left. That initial spark has just gone. So I hop from project to project, and I've done that a lot over my career, and it's kind of destabilized some of my projects, destabilized some of the websites and stuff. Some of them have done really well. I've sold a lot of them, but I've realized at the start of the pandemic that I need to stop hopping around and stop doing that stuff and just laser focus my attention on the right areas. So I found niches at the start of the pandemic and kind of re-optimized my sites because a lot of them at the start were in travel and finance. That was my main two niches, like 90% of my portfolio was travel and finance. And both of those niches just got destroyed by the pandemic. Like at the start, literally I had some sites doing 15K a month. And then in December, November, October, 15K, 15K, 15K. January rolls around where the pandemic really hits in and it did like $13 or something the entire month. I'm like, wow. God damn, okay. Yeah, so literally some of them just got nuked into the oblivion. But that also, again, opened my eyes. It made me realize that I need to diversify my portfolio more because I wasn't doing it. And it was too easy to just go and throw up sites that you'd already made and try and take like the second and third spots on top of already owning the first, right? And then it also allows you to then, you could sell a website and as long as there's not a competitive clause, a competitive contract, which you non-compete agreement, you can still compete with them and still rank them and still have those second, third sites overtaking the site that you just sold. So I started doing that. But I've realized, again, it's better to diversify, set up different niches, different income streams, everything, so that if anything does happen to one industry or even the entire world, like a pandemic, then you're totally fine.
Yeah, I think we all suffer from that shiny object syndrome, don't we? Come up with a new niche, new site, but there's only so much time in a day.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So why don't we dive into one of your newer shiny object syndrome projects then? Maybe one of your case studies, you mentioned that you had one in crypto. How's that going now? What was the process, I guess, with starting that and building it? Obviously, it's a very competitive niche. So what was your process, I guess, going into that project?
Yeah, so I've been building my own crypto portfolio for ages. And actually, I started blogging about like Bitcoin and stuff in 2011, I think it was. Okay. Like that was legit the first time I started even posting about it. And I was buying like Bitcoins and stuff for like $15 and $11, $12 a piece and things. Obviously, that's all gone, the majority. Because I was stupid when I was younger, and obviously you just didn't know too far about investments. But I've slowly built it up again over the last few years and stuff. And as a result, I've met a lot more crypto-oriented people. And in Chiang Mai, which is where I'm based right now, I ran into another SEO / crypto guy called Ed. He's like local leads Ed or something like that is his username. And he's majorly into crypto now. He has a local SEO agency, which kind of funds his crypto shitcoin-esque escapades.
His bad habit.
Exactly. And he started opening like a Telegram channel for people just to like talk about his trades and involve his audience and things like that. And I said, hey, why don't we make an actual crypto website, right? Why don't we start earning monthly commissions in Ethereum? You know, that sounds awesome. So, and he has all the knowledge. He has a lot of time. He writes like 2,000 words an hour. So I was like, hey, you do the content side of things. I'll handle the site design and the links. And we just started building it up slowly, slowly. I think we have like 50,000 words of content on the site already. It's like month one. So it's really not going, you know, anytime soon. But hopefully 6 to 12 months, we'll be looking at 100,000, 200,000 visitors a month. That's the aim, right? So, yeah. And obviously the traffic value in crypto is crazy. So even if we're just doing pure info content and we put like ads on there, put Ezoic or Mediavine or whatever, your RPMs are still going to be really high as long as it's tier one countries, right? You can get in crypto, you can have $80, $120 RPMs. Like it's actually quite common. Yeah. It's pretty insane. As long as you're in tier one countries, obviously that's the only kind of rule. So that's what I've been mainly doing this year, is kind of building this site and another site, which is kind of in a similar niche. It's not crypto, but it's still tech focused or oriented. I've just been slowly building those up. The other one is fully owned by me. That one's owned by, it's half and half of Ed. I don't really have many of the JV projects anymore. I used to own a lot of sites with a guy called Todd Foster. And then we sold all of them as well. And then I have a lot of sites that I just own myself. Like I said earlier, they make like 2,000, 3,000 a month. They could be making 20,000, 30,000 a month, but I have that shiny object syndrome, like you said. So, yeah.
Well, we'll just put it down to diversification, you know? 2 to 3 grand over multiple projects, yeah. We'll say it's diversification.
With the
crypto project, then, are you targeting tier one, or are you going to, non-English countries or tier two, tier three kind of countries there?
Yeah, so we're targeting tier one. I target countries in other languages anyway. Okay. So I don't know if I necessarily want to give away the tool that I use because it's so good. But I use a specific program. It begins with a G, so there you go.
Google.
And it allows you... it's close. People think it's that, but it's not, unfortunately. And basically, it's just an API thing. It has like a WordPress plugin, etc. You put it onto your website, and it will automatically translate your website and HF it all into different languages. So then you essentially just turn an already 100,000 page website automatically straight into other languages. And that's doubled our traffic overnight, right? Because you're getting all this traffic from like Indonesia, from, you know, we've even got Chinese traffic, right? And I thought Google was banned in China, so it blows my mind, you know, like how amazing this stuff is.
So that thing that changes the language, then it just translates the languages on the page, or it somehow changes like
It creates a whole it'll create a whole hreflang setup. It'll do the whole thing for you, and it's not a subdomain or anything. It's all on your own root domain. It'll just be like /fr/ your actual URL. So it's the whole French subdomain. Yeah, but it's really good. It's really good. Yeah.
Nice.
And it's literally overnight double some of my affiliate search traffic. It won't double your income because they're not tier one countries, of course. But it will literally double your traffic and things overnight. And sometimes to investors and stuff, and especially if you're selling a website, right? If you plan to sell your website in 6 months' time, if you go and add on all of these additional traffic sources, different changing the language and adding on these additional language pages, you can get so much more money in 6 months' time for your website than you can right now, just because you're getting the additional traffic, the additional email signups, all of that good stuff. So the thing that a lot of people think is that because these countries aren't tier one, that they're not as valuable in terms of affiliate and like ads and stuff like that, and that's correct, but that's just as valuable to you in terms of the email addresses, in terms of the pixel data, in terms of all of that stuff. So when you come to sell your website, if you sell an email list, they don't care what countries the emails are from. They don't care if they're half Brazilian, half Russian, half whatever. They'd pay a dollar an email or 25 cents an email or something like that. So those countries are still very valuable from the side of trying to get new email subscribers and the pixel data and all of that additional stuff as well, new user signups, those kind of things. That's how you add value to the website as well as having the actual revenue generating assets on top of it.
That's awesome. That's a little hack for everyone listening as well. Maybe to, if you're about to sell your site, throw some more languages on there. Mm-hmm. So, without going too deep into your project and giving away too much, what are you looking to target topic and keyword wise? Because obviously, you're probably not going to go after how to buy Ethereum, just because that's probably going to be smashed by some of the top crypto sites. So, are there any lower hanging fruits that you're looking to cover within there that maybe you can give away that aren't going to give away too much of your site?
Yeah, so I won't necessarily rank for that, but I will still build a page because it's all about building the topical authority, right, of your site. So you still need that page just because competitors will 100% have it. And that page is going to contribute to your overall authority and success of the website, as well as if you set up your URL structure, you could set it up, and I'm not going to give away the URL specifically that I use, but you could put like slash Ethereum and have your what is Ethereum under that page. And then you have slash best exchange slash, you know, prediction slash all that kind of stuff with additional slash forecast, right? So you have all of these additional pages that are underneath it. And then it allows you to have this main page, which is the topical hub and the thing of the page, which then underneath that page, you have in the tiers of the URLs, you have the additional pages, which is all supporting each other within that kind of topical hub, right? So that's what I like to do, is I will make those pieces of content anyway, and then hopefully in 3 years we'll rank for them, right? But initially I'm just doing it purely because you need it as part of the topical hub to build it all up, the topical cluster to build it, to build your website up into a proper authority.
How deep do you make those pages? Do you go?
It depends, like 3 or 4 layers sometimes. Yeah. Like, yeah, okay. For sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a limit then with how far you would go?
No, 100%. So the way I explain it is it's the same as like Windows File Explorer. It's literally the same setup, right, on your own structure. Everything should be within its own folder and everything should be within its own subfolder, right? And you just have to think of it as that's the easiest way to explain it to people because they've gone on Windows Explorer for so many times and everybody's used it. You have to at some point. And it's the easiest way to explore it. If, as long as everything's in its correct folder, it's all supporting each folder and each subfolder that's in. So that's the easiest way to explain it. We could go way more technical, talk about like spokes and topical clusters and all this stuff and things, but you don't really need to, right? So I like to think that as long as it's within the folder, it will be supporting the folder above it and so on and so on and so on and so on. So that's exactly
how it works.
And if you look at some of the massive directory websites, they will have like slash United Kingdom, slash West Midland, slash Birmingham, slash Sully Hull, slash fucking hairdressers slash best in this postcode, like, and it still all supports each other, and that's a lot of the reason why they rank, is because they have so many of these pages that are all supporting each other up the chain.
Is your internal linking structure then very strict, like just within that subfolder, or do you link out as well?
So 100% internal linking. I that's one thing that I think most SEOs mess up with. I'm super aggressive with my internal linking. The only thing that I'm not aggressive with is the keyword usage. So if you have a page that is what is Ethereum, I will only try and use the keyword what is Ethereum once in the internal linking of the entire site.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I will try. Yeah. So because I'll try and use different variations of the keyword or different variations of a keyword on every single internal link, so that you're passing different values through every time. And I try to make sure that the more competitive the anchor text is for the internal link, the more authoritative the page the internal link is on, right? Yeah. So you have the most competitive internal links linking from the most authoritative pages on your website. Gotcha. So that you're getting the most juice through the strongest or most competitive anchor text, essentially. So that you're theoretically sending the best chance to actually rank for that keyword because it has the strongest page on your website linking from it or something like that. So I try to do it in kind of a list format of the most competitive goes with the most authoritative, and it goes down to the least competitive goes on the least authoritative of the website. Mm. And I try to just use that, but every single internal link to one page is using a different variation of an anchor text, unless it's just really difficult to do. Like, there's some niches where it's very scientific words or something, you know, where you literally can't change that word because people only Google that thing. So sometimes you have to use it multiple times, but no times in the cases you don't, and it's better off using different variations so that you're going to rank for everything.
Ah, okay. That's interesting. I like that. That's something I did not know, and I'm sure hopefully the listeners as well picked that up as well for their own websites. But I wanted to cover maybe some of the common mistakes. I know you do a lot of SEO audits for video SEO audits for a lot of different sites, affiliate sites, e-com, whatever it is. Are there common mistakes? I mean, this internal linking one could be one anyway in itself, but are there any common mistakes that you see that are kind of a theme throughout most affiliate sites that you know, cover within your audits?
Yeah, there's a theme with SEOs and starting sites, which I hate, which is this thing that people get into their mentality that once it ranks, that's when I'm going to do the work. And I'm like, but that's not how it works. You need to do the work to get the rankings, right? And like, there's so, literally, there's so many people that have that mentality. Oh, I'll change the design once I'm getting traffic. Oh, I'll do the internal linking once I'm getting traffic, etc. But you're setting yourself up for failure with having that mentality, right? Because it's when you have a new site, you want the first index of that new site to have the best possible interaction with Google's crawlers as you can. Right, because the first time Google is clocking your site, the first time it's seeing that domain, it's literally first impressions, right, of your site. It's gonna immediately analyze and rank you, and you want to be starting off from a good position as much as possible from the get-go, so that you're allowing Google to say, okay, this website has the topical authority, it has the niche relevance, it has these signals, it has those signals, it has everything we're looking for from a website straight away, so that it will rank you straight away. You shouldn't be doing stuff after the fact. You should be doing it before. And I even take it to the extent that we won't index a site until we have dozens of pages live and ready to go, right? Until the website is, the design and the CRO and the load time optimization is finished. And then we've had the content writers and the publishing VAs go in and put all this stuff on the site. Then I'll publish it, right? I'm not going to put 5 pages on a site and let it index because it's not ready to index. And it's not going to allow that topical authority to build straight away off the get-go. Mm. So I try to make sure that SEOs don't do it as much as possible with that mentality, because I think it's the complete wrong mentality to have. In terms of other issues, internal linking is a massive one. People just seem to either over-optimize or under-optimize. The amount of affiliate sites I've gone onto and they have 100 blog posts, but none of them internal link to anything. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, yes, it's going to contribute to your overall topical authority, but it's not going to pass any specific juice or any specific topical signals to a page. It will just help your overall site. But all of your competitors have got actual page-specific signals coming from their content, and you don't. So it's a very easy fix to just go through and add internal links to everything. The only problem is that Google does tend to devalue links, even if they're internal, if you add them after the fact, right? It's a thing to do with, like, niche edits and stuff. I think Google tried to burn niche edits in link insertions as much as possible by just essentially removing them, removing the value they have by devaluing links that get added after the fact. And all they have to do is check the cache, right? Google's cache history is 2 years. So your page is in Google's servers and they can reference that cache for 24 months prior to the page that's indexed today. So if you have been adding links or adding insertions and things like that, or adding internal links without changing anything else, so you don't add in images, you don't change the sentences, you don't add anything like that, it tends to devalue it. So you want to try and make sure there's at least some edits, even to the point where you add your internal link and you change the metadata on the page. That still, like, triggers a better effect than if you just completely leave it on its own, right? So I see that quite a lot. The only other thing I would probably say is link building stuff. People don't understand it fully, or they've, like, listened to a link building strategy tutorial from, like, 3 years ago or 4 years ago or something, and they think they know this strategy, they think it works, but actually this part got burned years ago, or you shouldn't be using this anchor text, or these types of links don't work. All of that stuff. So people just tend to think they actually know how to do link building, and then they completely mess up their website because they have no clue, and they go and buy links off 6 different vendors whilst doing their own outreach campaign and trying to do all this stuff on top. and it just ends up being a complete mess. Nothing is coordinated, nothing is properly done, like none of the actual links look proper. And like a lot of the time, if you're buying off multiple vendors, somewhere along the way a vendor is going to mess up an order, because it's quite common as well. It's annoying, but link building services are pretty crap in general, and they tend to mess up orders. Like, it's a really annoying problem, but they will get things wrong. I got a site penalized many years ago because of a link building vendor who I was buying PBN links off. I sent them a sheet with the like 20 something URLs, 20 something anchor texts, obviously the each anchor text, and basically they built the links to 20x different URLs. Oh, sorry, yeah, they built it to 20 different URLs, but used the exact same anchor text from the first line on every single link. So I was like, and they're PBN links, so they were like immediately put live and like indexed, and like I got the report back like a week later, and I was like, what the fuck is this? And then. Yeah, I think 3 days after that, I got the penalty email. I'm like, oh, you bastards, you know. Like, so you just have to be aware and try and make sure that you have a complete understanding. And the most important thing with link building is it's an up-to-date understanding, right? So if you're genuinely struggling and you don't have the complete consensus, don't do it. Like, that's what I would say. Learn more, speak to some people. You know, you can hire me for a consultation if you need. There's all of this available resources out there that will make sure that you're set up for success rather than setting yourself up for failure. And if you're completely unsure, don't do it, because you're probably wrong. Like, that's what I've seen from the last 13 years of doing SEO, unfortunately.
Oh, perfect. This is actually a perfect segue into some link building stuff. But before I get there, first thing, if you're looking for done for you links, obviously talk to niche website builders. I have to give them a plug here. Yeah. And secondly, when you mentioned about the link insertions and the internal linking, I guess on older pages, does that mean you recommend, if you're going back now and you're like, realize, oh shit, I haven't done any internal linking on my site for the past year, would you recommend then going back and when you do your internal links, then adding some more text to those pages and then updating, I guess, the date as well with each time you do it?
Yeah. So when we're doing link insertions, I try to do that. But a lot of the time with link insertions, it's best off to try and find, actually, what I can't remember what it's called, but there's an RSOS. You know, RSOS. It's like reverse sink or swim. It's it's a methodology created by the OMG Machines guys. It was actually Scott Morrison or something like that. I can't remember his name. But it was actually him that created it. I try to do a slight different version of what they do, but essentially they build guest posts on sites that are the exact same as the content on your site. So let's say, you know, you have best fat burners as your article on your blog post. They will make a guest post about best fat burners and then they'll link it straight back. So it's exactly 100% relevant. What I like to do instead of that with link insertions is go into the SERPs. So like, let's say you're trying to rank for best fat burners. I'll Google best fat burners with, like, you know, Ahrefs or Mozbar or something, so I can see the metrics in the SERPs that I'm not checking all that stuff on top. And then I'll just go through and look for something that's not directly in competition with me. So I'll look for somebody who's like a health blogger or something like that isn't selling anything. They're not an affiliate. They're not anything that is directly in competition with me, but they're in the first 10 pages of Google for the exact keyword I'm trying to rank for. And then I'll just say, hey, how much is a link from this exact page that is already ranking? And by far the best links you can get are from your competitors in the search, right? They're like the ultimate golden goose kind of thing. And that's what I've been trying to do recently, is just basically RSOS link insertion. And that's been working phenomenally. Like, the amount of times that you have a page that's like on page 4 and it immediately goes to page 3 from one link that you get from a competitor is crazy. Like, it's so fast, it's unbelievable. So I really like that style of link building as well.
So you mentioned these sites that are ranking on the first 10 pages of Google that you're looking at.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because obviously generally you won't be able to find a competitor that will link to you for money in the first 10.
Yeah.
Especially in competitive niches. Sometimes you will if it's the less competitive niche. But they are competitors, but they can't be direct competition. Right. Yeah. So they can't actually, because they won't link to you. So you need it to be a blogger or something like that, where they're not actually selling anything or promoting anything. And half the time you get them really cheap. Like, I paid $50 or $100 because I let them tell me how much they want. And it's literally the best link I've got on the entire website for like $50. Like, it's crazy. So I really like that style. The other kind of style I like to do is making sure that there's tons of tier two stuff going on. So especially around the lower authority links, the higher authority links, which aren't niche relevant. So, you know, you get a link from the New York Times, because it's such a generic niche authority, you know, it's not actually any specific niche. It might be classed as a newspaper, but they're covering a bajillion topics. They have like tens of millions of index pages. It's huge, right? If you can get a link on there, and then you can start, even if it's no follow, right? If you can start blasting tier two links at it, it will make that link so much stronger than what it was before, because the link on its own is basically an orphan link, right? If you get a new editorial on a big publication, most of the time, 99% of the time, it's not going to have any internal links from the rest of the site. It won't have any social signals from users actually sharing the article. It won't have any links from anyone actually linking to the article. It's a complete orphan page on its own. And that obviously doesn't really give Google any value apart from like the root domain value that you get from the site. And even then, it's going to discount that root domain value because it's an orphan page. So I try to build some social signals, some backlinks. And if you can, if it's on a site that you can negotiate, try and negotiate some internal links from the best pages of the most authoritative pages on the site. You try and negotiate internal links from those, linking to your article, and that article goes to the moon, right? So there's all of these different ways to try and make guest posts actually powerful, because a lot of the time when people just buy plain guest posts, they don't do anything because they're orphan pages, like I said. So a lot of the time I try to make sure that there's some kind of tier two or internal linking or social signals or something. So basically I try and make signals to a link, because a lot of the time links are orphan links. So
nice. Yeah. I actually had tiered link building down as a little bit of a topic to discuss here, so we can transition perfectly into this. I'm a relative newbie in the space, and this tiered link building thing, I understand it, but I also want to get your perspective on it as well. If I'm going to get, say, a niche, say I get, as you mentioned, from the New York Post, the New York Times, whatever it is, you get a link to your site, and then you're going to look to get a niche edit to link to that post, why would I get a niche edit to link to that post to Pastor Juice when I could get that niche edit link straight to the post that I'm trying to rank? Is it just more powerful because I'm going through a higher DA website?
Okay, so it's twofold in my opinion. The first one is more of like a fear factor with lower authority link insertion and stuff like that. You don't, like with the New York Times, you know that website isn't gonna get penalized. You know they're not gonna be doing like link building schemes, they're not gonna get de-indexed, all that kind of stuff. With like DR 20, 30, 40 websites that are completely random that you just negotiated a link by via email on, you have no idea what that dude's going to do with that website, right? He could go and sell 1,000 gambling links tomorrow. He could go and like build GSA links at the site. He could completely fuck up all of these things and turn that link toxic, right? And toxic links are by far more impactful than any positive link you'll get. Mm. Almost to the point where you need like 10 really good links to get rid of that one toxic links effect on your page. Like it needs to be almost like a 10-to-1 ratio of really good stuff versus toxic crap. And unfortunately, it seems to be a lot of people not doing the vetting and the checks and stuff. So they accidentally build a link that's already toxic, let alone one that might become toxic. So I like to think of it as kind of a, I can't remember the word, but when you're trying to like dissuade people, like a defensive kind of strategy almost, of building those tier two just to power up that really strong tier one link even more, make it even stronger. And it also helps kind of negate away from SEOs looking at your campaign. If some of my sites have got like 40, 50, 60 RD to the site, but underneath on the tier two, I've built like thousands of niche edits and thousands of PBNs and this and that stuff on the tier two, right? So when SEOs go to look at my site and they're like, what the fuck? How is this guy ranking like a DR12, like 50 RD site? Like what the hell? He's like beating DR40 sites. And they obviously don't do the tier two layer check. And a lot of the time with PBNs and stuff, you can't, because they're hiding from bots and like this on top. So I like to do it again to kind of dissuade Google from having toxic links at your site, dissuading SEOs from seeing how you've done this, kind of reverse engineering your strategy. And on top, I like it because it allows nofollow links to kind of activate. So Google turned nofollow into a hint directive in 2019, November 2019. I think it was either 18th November 2019. And that essentially means that it's nofollow previously meant there was no juice passed to your site at all. So you couldn't get any specific juice. yes, you could get trust signals, which is basically what EAT is, right? We EAT, which is this whole white hat thing that people have been using the last 3 years. We've been calling it trust signals for like the last 20 years in the black SEO scene. It's we've known about it for a long time. And essentially, it was a trust signal. So that, you know, if you've got a Wikipedia nofollow link, if you've got a BBC nofollow link, yes, it might not actually rank your site, but it's going to prove to Google that your site is more authentic, and it's going to validate your site as being more of a real entity, more of a real business, more of a real company, et cetera, et cetera. It's another way to kind of validate your company and business and website with Google, which you really need to do, especially for new websites, because you want Google to trust you, especially like YMYL niches. You really need Google to trust your site. So a lot of the time, we were using it for that. So, but now that it's now a hint directive, Google's essentially told you, you need to activate that link for it to pass juice. So it's a hint directive to the extent that it won't pass juice if there's no other signals to that page. And we've tested it. So if you get a nofollow link, like I said, from an orphan guest post, so there's no other signals going to that page at all, that won't pass juice. It's unlikely it'll even pass a trust signal because it's not got anything going to it. Whereas if you start getting some internal links going, if you start getting some social signals, some backlinks, all that stuff on top, it can actually pass juice and it can theoretically be your most powerful link because competitors can't get a nofollow link that passes juice. Because 99% of competitors don't even know that's a thing.
Wow.
Right? So, yeah. So a lot of the time, a lot of my secret sauce, and also bear in mind that tools like Majestic, Ahrefs, Moz, they discount nofollow links as part of your metrics.
Yeah.
So if you built like 100 nofollow links at your site, you'll still be a DR1 or DR0. Like it might be DR0.2 or something because they count so minimally towards your overall statistics. So putting that again is another way to throw off SEOs, because if 90% of your portfolio is nofollow and they're like, what the hell, how is he ranking? Because it's all nofollow links and it's got DR0. It's another way to just throw off SEOs even more. Half the time, I feel like a lot of the time in the SERPs, it's you're more wanting to like throw off SEO competitors that are trying to reverse engineer your strategy. And any time I can do that is a bonus for me. So like I really like it. You know, if they want to spend an extra 10 hours looking at something that takes me 5 minutes to do, I'm loving it, you know, so it's perfect.
So if I'm thinking about this in terms of application, so for example, I could create a Wikipedia page on maybe my brand or whatever, link to my site, and then pump that link Wikipedia page with links, and that'll basically enhance the power of that nofollow.
Yeah, and also because of this is another trick that a lot of people don't know. Wikipedia's external links are moderated, right? So if you add an external link, it will likely, especially if you're a new account, it will get added to the moderation queue, the editor's queue, whatever they call it. Whereas internal links don't. So if you have a Wikipedia page about your business, and you can get editors, you can pay them off to make a Wikipedia page for your business. I've done it many times. You can actually then get other Wikipedia pages, which are very powerful, have, you know, very strong links, etc., to internally link to your Wikipedia page, and that doesn't get moderated, so that they will stay. You know, as long as an editor doesn't come on the page, sees the revision changes and edits it back, that link will stay. And so you've basically for free powered up your page without having to earn a link, without having to build a social signal, without having to do any of that, because all of these other pages with tons of links are now linking to your page internally and passing you all this juice that you needed. So I like that strategy with Wikipedia as well, because you don't actually need to power up a Wikipedia page because it will do it for you if you do it correctly.
Wow, okay, there you go. Some Wikipedia hacks for everyone listening. But regarding, I guess you could say, just niche edits, guest posts, anything like that. Regarding your anchor text, do you build exact match anchors straight to your page, or are you looking at more generic brand anchors for your content, or are you just doing a mix of everything?
Yeah, so unlike a lot of SEOs, I don't. So I'm in me and so Kyle Reef. Let me start the story. Kyle Reef is another SEO, very well known. He lives in Chiang Mai, literally 10 minutes up the road from me. Carl and I have a shared philosophy around link building, which is we don't link directly to money pages unless it's the best link your site could ever have. So unless you are going to get featured in the New York Times and you're going to get like quoted and you're going to get a specific link to that page or something, then yes, you want to link to your money pages. But that's never going to happen for your affiliate site, realistically. Like, it's not. So I just don't like linking to money pages because of the whole toxic link factor. So if a link does turn toxic or it becomes toxic or anything like that, it's completely destroyed that page 90% of the time. So I prefer to just link to supporting pages. And the supporting page can likely power up, because of the internal links it has, more pages than a money page anyway. Because you have a money page, you're less likely to internally link to other pages on the site. You're less likely to external link to other sites, etc., etc. You're less likely to utilize the juice that that page is getting to spread around your site. Whereas with supporting content, it's quite common to link to 10 to 20 different money pages from one piece of supporting content internally, and with keyword focused anchor text internally, right? So you're going to actually theoretically power up more pages linking to a supporting piece of content than you are going to link to a money page anyway. And if a link turns toxic, you don't give a fuck if that page gets de-indexed, right? Because it's a supporting piece of content. It doesn't actually give you any money in your bank account. It just gives you overall topical authority. And the fact that it's cheaper to buy links that link supporting content than it is to money pages. A lot of sites just straight up won't link to your like vacuum cleaner review, right? Yeah. Because they don't want to, because it looks bad and it looks crap. So, but they'll quite happily link to your vacuum cleaning guide. So, and it'll a lot of the times be cheaper than linking to your money page. So there's kind of a threefold way that I don't like linking to money pages. I like linking to supporting content that can then power up all of my different money pages. Yeah.
So then are you going branded or generic to your supporting page, then supporting page internally right. link with the keyword variation that you want to the money page?
Yeah, so I don't use straight branded to any of my internal pages. I'll use branded at the homepage, but I don't think you should, you know, if your website's Google and you're linking with Anchor Text Google, you shouldn't be linking that to like the page about vacuum cleaning reviews, right? You should be linking it to your homepage. So I like to use variations of the brand. So I'll use like Google's vacuum cleaning guide or something like that, right, as the Anchor Text. That helps. But I've also done some tests many years ago. I haven't done them recently, to be fair, which showed that the longer the Anchor Text was, the less likely it was to be toxic, which is fucking mental, right? So if you had like a 20 word long anchor text, Google is like, that's never going to be like some blackout link, you know? I also like to do that, where you can have longer form anchor texts with supporting content, because you can go really detailed and make it, you know, that Google's vacuum cleaning guide for beginners on these basic tips or something like that, and it makes it a lot more white hat looking. So there's multiple kind of levels to why I like using it. And in terms of anchor text, it's, yeah, I only really link branded to the homepage because I'm trying to stack the entity. And then I just try to use the supporting content's title and variations of keywords around it. I will try and rank some supporting content, because I don't think it's a good idea to just focus on ranking your money pages and not have any supporting content ranking. I think that's just asking for trouble in the long term, and kind of anti-future-proofing. And I really like future-proofing the site against algorithm updates and against all that stuff. And also, when it comes to the... I flip a lot of my sites as well. So like Empire Flippers is the main platform that I sell my sites on. I also sell through like a lot of private deals, to be fair. But when I sell with them, they do their due diligence on the site. And the less stuff that they're flagging in their due diligence for investors, the more likely I am to sell that site. So I try to future-proof as much as possible. They will tell their investors if there's PBN links on the site, right? Which, as they should do, a lot of marketplaces don't, right? but as they should do. So when I sell a site, I remove all of my PBN links. I replace them for like niche edits and guest posts and stuff like that, because I make sure that there's nothing that could potentially offset the value of the site at the end, right? I try and maximize, like I said at the start of the interview, I try to maximize the value of my website. And same goes for taking away the minimizing factors as well.
Gotcha. What's your opinion then on relevancy versus power with links? Are you going after power, not caring about relevancy, or are you like, I need relevancy and it's going to be a combination of both?
So with me, it depends, right? So they're actually they're a combined scale. The more authority, the less relevancy, and the less authority, the more relevancy, right? So that's how I work it out. If you have a DR20 site and it's completely irrelevant, it's probably not going to give you very good returns. But if you have, like, so the New York Times, you can link to basically any niche because all of them are going to be fine. So all of that kind of stuff, it's all a scale of how authoritative versus the less relevancy you actually need.
Gotcha. That makes sense. And then for anyone listening that's looking to maybe do some of their own outreach with link building, how are you deciding the price of your links? Do you have like a little formula that you use based on DR or anything like that? Or is it just kind of negotiation, what you want to pay?
It's mostly niche dependent, right?
Yeah.
So the cheapest niche I can think of is probably video games. Like I've got links for $10-$15 in video game niches because it's so easy. And you also bear in mind that a lot of the bloggers and like these guides websites, they're literally operated by like 15-year-old kids in their bedroom. Like $15 to them is a lot of money. Like it's pretty good. So you know that's their new game I've sorted. So there's all of this stuff where you can get a lot of value at some of the lower end stuff. But then at the higher end, you can also just get completely bamboozled by the link cost. So if you want to try and go into gambling and you don't have capital, good luck, mate, because the links are a fortune. You know, some gambling sites, they're DR15 and they will charge $400, $500 a link, right? Oh. That in some niches, that would, you know, you'd need a DR70, 80 site to get that kind of money. And that's, you know, the minimum you need to get that kind of money. So I like to, it's all completely niche dependent and you really need to do your research into where it's valuable and where it's not. And most of the time I like to ask site owners how much they want to charge me for a link. Half the time they'll go, you know, oh, we want 10K. And I'll be like, well, you're not getting that. How about an iPad instead? You know, something like that. And I also try to trade things that I have. So like randomly I saw like a job lot of iPads on eBay for like £3,000 for like 30 iPads or some shit. So I was like, okay, let's just do iPad outreach. And I'm like, hey, who wants an iPad for some links? Exactly, right? Who wants an iPad for some links? And I got loads of links that would have cost me like hundreds of dollars, maybe like $500 for a link for an iPad, right? And the iPad only cost me $100. So I was really happy with stuff like that. There's also some trading that you can do around link exchanges. So as I said earlier, I did travel, a lot of travel sites, right? And within my travel portfolio, I created a Facebook group for travel blogger link exchange. Oh, right? Yeah. And the Facebook group went to like 30,000, 40,000 members. And I had like a fake Facebook account, which was the admin. And I'd pinned a post like, hey, DM me if you want a link exchange. Just send me your site, the metrics, and I'll send you one of my sites back and see if you can link to it. All I was doing was getting legitimate travel bloggers to exchange links on my travel PBM. So like, that's it. I was just like trading a link for an actual legitimate travel blog to one of my sites straight for one of my travel PBM links. And that worked all day, every day for like several years. Wow. So that's all I was doing. I wasn't spending any money on links. So I just set up a travel PBM with like 50 sites, cost me a few $1,000s. And then literally traded for hundreds and hundreds of links that probably would have cost me maybe $100,000 at the end of the day or something, you know. So yeah.
Damn, I'll be awaiting your iPad outreach course on Gumroad soon. <Yeah. then. laughs> That's an interesting way of doing it. I know recently you shared an Ahrefs case study on Twitter, and that was the correlation between number of links and how high you rank. Now, I guess you had not just that post, but even your post had a lot of comments still poo-pooing the results of that case study. In your opinion, is this a chicken and the egg thing? They're ranking high, so they're getting backlinks, or they're getting backlinks, so they're ranking high?
I think it's that is a good question. I think obviously the longer they're there, right, the longer they rank, the more likely it is to be the latter. But the least time they've been there, the more likely to be the former. However, it's still the case that whoever has the most links is number one, true. Right? Like, so it doesn't matter, right? At the end of the day, it's still proving that the links in general are the number one factor from what it seems. And from what I've seen so far, right, it is the number one factor, because at the higher end, everybody has the same on-page, everybody has the same content, everybody has the same topical authority. It's literally only the links that are making that are the difference maker for those top tier SERPs. Especially if you think about like things like car insurance or like gambling SERPs, where they don't even have any content on their homepage. You know, how are they ranking with 100 words of content on the homepage of a big search box because of links, right? So it's always the thing where people will say, oh, user experience is the number one ranking factor. And I'm like, oh, right, yeah. No.
I think we've all experienced it anyway in the niches we're in. I mean, you search whatever in your niche, and you have, again, those big news sites ranking with some of the worst worst content on Google. But, you know, 1, 2, 3,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So
But that's Parasite SEO again. That's because of authority and because of links and everything. It's because of that, right? It's the same thing. And it's also, it's even more so the case in foreign SEO search. So if you're dealing with non-English language, links are literally the deciding factor. And it's also, most of the time, it's blackout links still. It's like smashing PBNs and smashing niche edits and stuff. And still the link velocity charts are like, bam, you know, it's crazy. It's literally from stuff that you've seen in like 2011 working, is still working in like Norway and Sweden and Singapore and stuff, right? So it's crazy.
Oh, that's epic. Well, that's actually a perfect segue again into the Parasite SEO. So I want to touch on some of the, I guess, you're able to blackout SEO with this in terms of Parasite. So do you want to cover maybe what Parasite SEO is? Maybe if you're keen to dive into really how to do it properly.
Yeah, so Parasite SEO is essentially using other people's websites that allow you to make a page on the website. Either you pay for it or it's free. You sign up for an account, you know, think of like, what's it called? Buzzfeed.com. You can sign up, make an account. Generally, when you're dealing with Parasite SEO, you're wanting it to be on the root domain. So you don't want subdomain builders like, you know, .wordpress.org or something like that, because you're not going to get the root authority of the links that's going to power up the site. So if you've, you know, you can go and Google any kind of fat loss, fat losing, Viagra keywords, all that kind of stuff right now, and there will be some pages, if not the majority of the pages ranking will be from like online publications, news magazines, all that kind of stuff, which either you can pay for a link in or you can build it yourself. The same goes for like social profiles, and the same goes for about pages, Wikipedia pages, all of that kind of stuff on top. Because you can get those pages created and the root authority of the domain is so high, they will automatically rank anyway. If you build a Wikipedia page, I don't care what keyword it is, literally, if there was no Wikipedia page already ranking there, that Wikipedia page will rank. Like, it will immediately go to the top 10 pages. It is that powerful of a domain and that powerful of a site, right? And Google also just trusts it that much. A lot of people don't realize that how did Google start scraping? Like, they must have some starting point, right? They can't just have, they can't just send their crawlers onto the internet because they need to send them somewhere to begin with. And Google actually has a, and it's in their patents, they have a set list of seed sites that they put into its crawlers to allow it. And they say, basically, the closer you are to one of these seed sites, the more likely you're going to rank anyway. That's the layman's terms version of it. And Wikipedia is obviously one of those sites, right? It's quite obvious that it's a seed site for Google. And it makes sense anyway, because it's probably the number one source of like entity relations and things like that Google is kind of looking at anyway. So I like to try and find really high authority sites that either allow you to buy a link or build a page on the site, not buy a link, buy a page, or build a page on the site. And then you essentially build tier 2 links, social signals, all that kind of stuff at that page, and it will just automatically fly up. Also, because the authority is so high, you can get away with links that you wouldn't normally be able to link to your site, right? Because your site's like DR30, if you went and spammed 1,000 links at it, you're probably going to get like de-indexed or penalized. If you go and do that on Wikipedia or like one of the other massive sites, it seems to have the opposite effect where it just goes to the moon, right? So a lot of the time, the older tactics that don't work on your site are still working on these massive publications, on these massive authority sites. So a lot of the old school SEOs just transition from their own site spamming to just pure Parasite spamming. And that's why a lot of affiliate terms, you have 7, 8, 9 of the top 10 positions all being Parasite pages from SEOs.
Oh, yeah. Do you have any examples of pages like that? Because I know, obviously, a lot of the news sites allow you to do sponsored posts essentially as Parasite. But do you still count things like Medium.com as a Parasite?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%. Medium is probably the most common Parasite right now. So in terms of people doing stuff. There's so many though, like it's literally unbelievable. All you need to do is go and look at the top few pages of Google for some big affiliate terms and you'll find pages that you can steal. In terms of thinking of terms right now, I can think of them, but I haven't looked at them recently and they might have changed because they change all the time. And that's the other thing with Parasite SEO. It's unlikely if you're doing affiliate SEO if you're doing parasite SEO in a SERP where somebody else is also doing parasite SEO, it's unlikely that you'll maintain the top spot for any significant amount of time. You'll probably have it for a week and then not have it for a week and then have it the next week, then not have it for a week. It's because it just bounces them all around because it doesn't really know which one it should be ranking, and it's giving chances to this one, then it'll give chance to this one. And so it just keeps on kind of repeating through the same few sites every cycle. So it's not kind of guaranteed income, right? And that's why a lot of people in this space will throw up 100, 200 parasites a month, right? Oh. So that they just are diversifying all over the place. They're building all of these niches, they're building all this stuff. And then they're just kind of fingers crossed, something will rank and they're going to make 10K off that page a week, right? Something like that. And some people do make that money. So it's very powerful. The other side of it is for online reputation management. So you're a person who, when you were 25, went bankrupt because of some stupid shit, right? And because of that bankruptcy, you're now all over these bankruptcy
just
websites.
Just for listeners, he's not talking about me specifically.
I'm just talking about generic cases, right? So the most common one I see is people come to me because they've had bankruptcy previously and it's really affecting their new business opportunities or their new investment opportunities. So there's tons of other cases as well, of different cases. This is an example. But with that, what you'll try and do then is you'll basically try and remove all of those negative articles, those negative mentions and stuff, and push them down to pages 2-3 where nobody actually goes and looks at anyway. So you'll use articles, you'll use social profiles, you'll use about.me, use Wikipedia, use anything that you can to build a page, and then just start hitting it with links. And eventually, especially number one, within the first month, you'll normally take over the page anyway. It's normally the months after that you need to do continual work to make sure they stay there, because it's the freshness algo mixed with like the kind of authoritativeness algo. So you're getting two in one, where you're getting, also it adds, if you're getting sites in like big publications and Google News, it will also add the Google News pocket for you as well, which can further take away SERP real estate from negativity. So that's one of the most common one, is people doing RRM. And some agencies now have kind of baked in RRM into their service providings, and it's now their most profitable service offering in some of these people's agencies. I know, because they hired me to teach them how to do it. So they should have told me, hey, look, we are now charging 10K to 30K per client for like reputation management of their own brand SERP. And like, they have 100 pages about their company. Wow. So when we go and build 20 in a day, we're just automatically taking over 5 of the spots. So, and it costs literally nothing to do it. Like, it's so cheap. You know, you can get a writer to write 20 articles for like $500 and then spend another $1,000 in links, and you've ranked for that brand term for the next few years and you're absolutely smashing it. And then you go and charge the client 10 to 30K for that work, right? The profit margins on that are ridiculous. And a lot of the time as well, you can upsell. So I upsell, or I used to upsell, because I don't do client SEO anymore because it's a ball ache and a pain in the ass. And I do not wish it on my worst enemy, to be honest. Some of the clients I've dealt with, good God. But yeah, a lot of the time when you're actually offering it as well, it's generally the easiest offering you can do. You can get like interns to run it for you. You can get people that have no idea about SEO to go and set up profiles and stuff, because it's the easiest part about SEO. And then you can literally just order links from tier two or tier one vendors. Niche Website Builder is an example, right? You can order links try and get those up. Exactly. So you can outsource literally everything to the point where it costs minimal and you get maximum return investment.
How much of this is going on within politicians and big like corporate businesses? Is this like a very common thing that we're just literally all the bad news is just getting buried?
So I have two examples. I know one guy in the UK who, he did a degree in journalism. He then went into SEO, started doing SEO, and he kind of realized he had all these like political connections and journalism connections and things that he should set up like a political SEO agency. And I think he's doing really well. So he's doing purely online reputation management kind of style stuff. It's very cheap to do. He doesn't have any employees. It's all like outsourced stuff. And he charges crazy money. I think it's like minimum £25,000 or something to do it. The other one is Matt Gaetz. You know Matt Gaetz, who's like an American... Okay, so he's a US congressman or something.
Yeah.
I actually know, basically, I know he's done it because he reached out to another friend of mine who's an American SEO, who I taught Paris at SEO, and he was trying to get him to do it for him. So basically, he got caught up. He's a US congressman. He's like one of the youngest as well. He's like only 35 or something. And he basically got caught up in like a human trafficking thing. Like, it's mental, right? Yeah. Like, it's legit crazy shit. And like, obviously, so he just got slammed with these reviews from like everybody, right? Everybody was just killing him. And fair enough, you know. Yeah. But he hired people to basically smash YouTube, smash Twitter, smash Google with everything, every piece of content possible, so that when you search his name, it basically doesn't come up. And also, wow. he's the only politician I know that he pays someone to do auto-suggest manipulation as well. So when you put it through, it doesn't have any of like his drama or accusations or human trafficking attached to his auto-suggest anymore. It's pure like political. So that was probably one of the clever times I've seen it being used. And I genuinely think that saved his career. Like, I actually believe that, to the point where, like, he was like a big guest on Fox News and they loved him, to the point where even like Fox News like slandering him and like properly having to go at him and stuff. And he was one of their like biggest guests beforehand and things. So I do think it can work to the political extent as well. I've also seen it on the crypto side, where people will create drama or create fake news around coins and tokens and things. So they'll pay for like a Forbes article, like slating a token they're trying to short or something like that, or pay for it for their own promotional tokens and things like that. So I've had quite a lot of crypto projects, NFT projects especially, that have messaged me, hey, how can we implement SEO into our strategy or something like that, you know? So it makes it, and a lot of them as well, I think, have like kind of rug pulled their audience and stuff.
I'm sure.
And they're trying to get rid of that, like, yeah, it's like if you Google their token, the number one auto suggest is rogue, you know. So it's like, yeah, that's probably the thing that you want to get rid of if you're trying to scam people, you know, unfortunately. But I'm not going to help them, so
yeah, we'll clarify that. No, that's crazy. Like, it's crazy to think how deep it goes. I mean, I would assume then through the whole US election cycle that would just be rampant, like.
Yeah, yeah, massive. Well, I think it was like the Cambridge Analytica.
Yeah, I remember that.
Like, it was fully a part of their like strategy. Like, they had SEOs and stuff working for them. Obviously, I think that they've gone bust and stuff now, and they're like getting sued into the ground by the British government and things and stuff. But you know, we'll see.
Damn, that's crazy. I got one last question for you before we finish this up. The future of Google search, where you think it's going? Because right now, every month or so, we see a new feature, more YouTube videos, Google Shopping, whatever else, more ads, more Google ads. Suddenly, there's only maybe 4 or 5 organic results on the page. You know, where do you see this going in the next months and years?
Yeah, so we were seeing, we actually spoke about this on Twitter either earlier today or yesterday. I can't remember. My life was so fast. And we were talking about Google's own services ranking. So if you Google cloud right now, if you Google cloud storage, Google's ad is number one, and then Google is number one organically. If you Google camera or online camera, Google Chrome Store is number one organically, and Google Play Store is number two. So if there's so many kind of aspects of where Google is just slowly favoring their platforms, very obviously as well. And to the extent that I think either the US government or something needs to step in and intervene in Google bidding on its own terms in PPC, right? Like, that seems, even aside from SEO, if I was a PPC guy, and like, I would have to go up against Google Cloud Storage, and I'm like trying to do the PPC for Dropbox, and I'd be really pissed off that Google was obviously number one, and like, they're always going to be number one because they don't need to spend money to be number one, right? So I think they need to regulate that side more so than the organic side, because I think they should just be banned from using their own PPC system. In terms of the SEO side, I do see Google's own things just being consolidated even further, and like, new, as you said, new features being added, hotels, travel, insurance, jobs. It's slowly taking everything, right? So I think the best way as SEOs is to try and just future-proof yourself against what Google's expanding into. So try and look at the news about what Google's actually expanding into. Try and look at the patents that they're filing. The easiest way you can tell that Google's going to go into a niche is the patents that they filed 3 years ago, because they filed patents around hotel comparisons and around travel comparisons, around job search APIs and all this stuff. So, and they filed that years before they added the feature in. So you can future-proof yourself by knowing what Google is likely going to go into and try and prepare for that eventuality just by looking at what Google is kind of announcing. The other end is Google's zero-click searches, right? So these whole searches where they have featured snippets, it's against Google's terms of service to scrape Google, but they scrape you and put you at the top of the box without giving you any credit or fucking clicks or anything or ad spend. So I see that becoming more common, like feature snippets are going to become more and more invasive, if anything. Like I'd say, I would say within the next 5 years, 25% of searches are going to result in a feature snippet, to be honest. And then you have the other end where what ranking factors are going to still stay important. I don't see Google dropping links anytime soon, because it's just, they put so much technology, so much money, so much information into it, that it would make little sense to look at something else as a ranking factor when this has worked so well for them. And it's kind of differentiated them at the beginning, especially from the other search engines. So I think that we'll still see a focus on backlinks. It will just mean that you'll need to be more technical with some of your stuff and things. But at the same time, I say all this, and then, like, right now, more auto-generated content sites are ranking than ever. So, like,
that's true.
I don't, you know, like, more crap is ranking now than it was 5 years ago. So, like, I, you know, it's hard to tell, because Google hasn't exactly made the progress you'd expect it to do. What a lot of SEOs have said, hey, look, Google's dropping more algorithm updates than ever before. Like, it's really scary. Like, all this, everything's going like this, blah, blah, blah. I'll say, yeah, they are dropping more than ever. But those, even if you add all of them up, they're less impactful than some of the major updates that have been going on in the past. Like, the Medic update a couple of years ago was by far more impactful than basically every update that we had last year. Like, it did genuinely seem that way. So I do seem to think that Google's algorithms, and actually, if you look at the impact over time, the Panda algorithm had, like, the most impact of any Google algorithm update ever, right? And then it's slowly gone in like this, like, it's gone down and down. There's, like, a bar chart over time of the impactfulness of these updates. And I think Google's kind of maxing out on the current technology that they can utilize. So I think until it becomes a quantum processing realm, essentially, I don't see that Google will drop links, and I don't see commercial quantum processing being distributed widely for at least, like, 10 to 15 years, realistically. And they haven't really surpassed the tech bar that they need to even do that, so it's probably 25 years. So I'd say SEOs are good for at least a decade, maybe 2 decades.
So SEO's not dead, like everyone says then, all over Twitter.
hell no. Yeah, I know most of the SEO people that I know are making more money this year than they have made ever before. So, you know, there you go.
Straight from Charles. Well, thanks for coming on, Charles. I mean, we could keep talking. There's a billion topics we could cover, but I don't want to take too much of your time. But thank you for coming on. Learned a lot. Really appreciate it. And hope to eventually we'll get you back on at some point, maybe in the near future as well.
Well, I appreciate you for having me, James.
Perfect. Sure. Cheers, Charles. You can stay on there.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.